97.1 FM Talk Podcast. This hour of the Mark Reardon Show is sponsored by Gamma Tree Experts. Your trees deserve the best care. Call Gamma Tree Experts. This is the Mark Reardon Show on 97.1 FM Talk.
Welcome. It is Joe Beamer in for Mark Reardon here on 97.1 FM Talk, the final hour. Great to be with you on this hump day. And we are focusing in on gerrymandering as the spotlight is on the Texas Democrats in Illinois and in New York. And the DNC chair, Ken Martin, had this to say about the Texas Democrats fight cut two.
Well, look, I think the Texas House Dems are going to do everything they can to continue to fight against these illegal, unconstitutional acts of Governor Greg Abbott, Ken Paxton, and others in Texas. That means staying out as long as they possibly can. This isn't just some sort of stunt. I mean, this requires everyone at this point, not just Texas Dems, but people throughout this country who are quite outraged at this illegal power grab by Donald Trump and Greg Abbott.
All right. So to continue the talk about gerrymandering, let's bring in Sam Wang. He is a member of the Princeton Gerrymandering Project. Sam, thanks for joining us.
Hey there, Joe. Thanks for having me.
So before we get to the specifics, describe to the listeners, what is the Gerrymandering Project?
Well, the Princeton Gerrymandering Project here in New Jersey is a nonpartisan project to try to understand what diagnose gerrymanders by looking at voting patterns and maps around the country to grade them according to an A through F scale and to provide neutral standards so that courts and voters can judge whether they have been malevolently gerrymandered into districts that take away their power.
And as we know, the spotlight is on the Texas Democrats. They went to Illinois, so I think the spotlight has to be on Illinois. What did you find in the state of Illinois?
Well, we've evaluated congressional maps all around the country, and Illinois is quite a pip. It's drawn by a single party, the Democrats, and it is one of about a dozen maps around the country that we gave an F. So it's right down there with Texas and with North Carolina.
And what played into Illinois getting an F? You know, we all see the map, Sam, right? We all look at see the map and go, that looks ridiculous. Yeah. What do the numbers show?
Yeah. One way to look at a gerrymander is to look at these crazy districts like the one from near you in St. Louis that goes all the way to Urbana, or, for instance, in Texas, the one that goes from San Antonio to Austin. And these are crazy shapes. But sometimes crazy shapes are not necessarily bad because they can join communities. So what we do is we take math and science and data, and we ask these kinds of questions. If we take, here's an example. If we take the state as a whole, and we look at all the districts, Democratic-leaning, Republican-leaning, we take voting records, and we estimate how each district is going to vote, Democratic or Republican. And then we come up with simple scores to find out whether overall it could have arisen by chance. Because redistricting, you got to take care of a lot of people. You have to take care of different communities, counties, cities, communities of faith. There's all kinds of things that you have to take into account to draw a good map. And so what we can detect statistically is whether one criterion favoring one party took precedence over all the other criteria. And that's called, in statistics, that's called finding an outlier. And if we find an outlier, then that tells us that probably somebody drew the map to favor their favorite group, whether it be Democrats or Republicans. And so we did this for Illinois, and so we confirmed the kind of thing that you can see by looking at some of these crazy shapes.
Now, you were here in Missouri, and you guys gave Missouri a perfect report card.
Well, we did give Missouri a good grade. Missouri, we looked at both the congressional delegation. We also looked at the House and the Senate. And it is true, Missouri did pretty well. And we gave Missouri A's according to our grading rubric.
Now, you know, I've played around with this map all afternoon, and I want just some specifics, you know, because we're talking about some states, they have a partisan lean, others don't. Not surprising that Kentucky doesn't. They have a Democrat governor, but they're, you know, a Trump leaning state. Now, Nebraska got a favorable grade but leans Republican. Now, is that because of registration? How do you figure something like that out?
Well, the way it works is that this is tough and it requires a little bit of math. And so here's an example. So if you take all the districts in a state, let's say Illinois or Nebraska or Missouri, and you can calculate a thing like you can look at all the districts and say, are more than half of the districts above average for one party or the other? This is the Lake Wobegon test. If all the kids are above average, then you've got something. So if you can get most of the districts above average for one party or the other, then we can measure statistically whether that could have arisen by chance. And so, for instance, in Illinois, way more districts favor Democrats than you would expect based on the average vote share. And so a lot of districts in Illinois are above average for Democrats. These other states you mentioned, Missouri and Nebraska, that kind of thing is less pronounced. And so, you know, we have to take into it. So this kind of measure that I just told you about, which you can figure out with a pencil and paper, is the kind of thing that takes into account how many people in a vote in a state vote Democratic or Republican, how many districts there are. And we turn that into a probability that there is an outlier. And so we do it with stuff that high school statistics are enough to figure out these things.
Now, I was surprised by the state of Washington, right? That's a state that, you know, usually in national elections goes blue, but has a partisan advantage of Republican. How does something like that work out?
Oh, so I see that you are, in fact, an aficionado of the site. I am so pleased that you went to gerrymander.princeton.edu and drilled in. Okay, let's go there. So in a case like Washington, the legislature is going to be majority Democratic because it's a Democratic-leaning state. But that doesn't mean that the legislature, that the map necessarily favors Democrats. It could favor Democrats if it gave them even more seats than you would expect based on the fact that it votes a certain amount Democratic. Or if it gives them fewer seats, then we would say that maybe it favors Republicans. So in the case of Washington State, the map can still be majority Democratic, but actually maybe give a little bit of extra chance to Republicans, for instance, by giving them places where they can compete. And even though they don't get a majority, they have places that they can run and potentially win.
That is so that's so interesting. Oh, yeah. Sam, let me tell you, I've had a lot of fun with the site. Anything that is interactive and I can hover over and then click on, that is right down my lane.
Oh, that's outstanding.
I got to ask you about New York because I'm in New York. And, you know, New York, Buffalo, right? That's right. The great state and the great city of Buffalo. New York had a map that they wanted to get approved and was ruled unconstitutional. By any chance, did you guys look at that map and what that would have meant in this grading system?
Oh, yeah. The congressional map that the New York legislature originally drew, it was a complicated story involving a commission, and then the commission got overridden by the legislature, and it was like this big pile of worms. And in the end, that map was overturned by a court. That map would have gotten, we did look at it, and it was an F. And if you dig around on our site, if you click around, you can find that map, but we didn't put it on the front page because it's not currently being used in elections. And the court appointed a special master to then take into account a lot of the different factors that I mentioned a few minutes ago and draw a map that's more competitive, more representative of the voters of New York. And in fact, the map that special master put in place is way more competitive. And if you go up and down the Hudson River Valley, there are all these districts that could swing either way. They swung towards several of them swung towards Republicans in 2022, and they're going to be up for grabs next November. And so there's a lot of competition in New York. And so that map went from being an F to an A because of the intervention of a court.
But let me ask you, because obviously our politics are very partisan in 2025. Do you expect if we were to revisit this map in 10 years, there'd be a lot more of the Fs, the red for Fs on this map in 10 years, given the next census and just given the partisan, how partisan the country's become?
That is a really great question. I will say that is in the hands of your listeners, of voters all over the country. Gerrymandering was the worst in 2012, actually, when there was just this wave, this festival of gerrymandering all over the country. And this is going to sound counterintuitive, but actually gerrymandering has gotten a little bit less bad in the last 10 years because of citizens passing initiatives, because of courts intervening. And even though the Supreme Court doesn't want to go there, and they've declined to get involved, there are places for citizens to get involved. For instance, citizens could bring a ballot initiative in Illinois and take away the power from politicians and make redistricting there a citizen power rather than a politician's power, and do away with gerrymandering. So it's certainly true that these things that we're watching, this spectacle, is pretty bad in Texas and Illinois and other states. But it's also true that citizens can make a difference. And so actually there's somewhat more competition now than 10 years ago, which, I know that everything's supposed to be terrible, but I feel this faint, faint ray of hope.
Well, Sam, everyone can go and check this out. Check out your website, which I had right up. It is gerrymander.princeton.edu. And like I said, have some fun with it. Go around, click on these states, and learn about not only your state, but about the state, the 50 states of these great United States.
All right. Thank you so much.
Hey, Sam, thank you. Appreciate it. That is Sam Wang. He is a member of the Princeton Gerrymandering Project. Again, you can visit that, gerrymander.princeton.edu, if you'd like to see, well, you know how Missouri grades because we talked about it, but if you'd like to check in on some other states, great work that they have done there. We'll be back after this. It's Joe Beamer in for Mark Reardon on 97.1 FM Talk. Welcome back, Joe Beamer, in for Mark Reardon here on 97.1 FM Talk. Hope everyone's having a great Wednesday. You know, we've seen so many examples of just people being broken, right, by the current president. And I can't think of anyone else. I can think of about a list of people. But Joe Walsh has, you go to his Twitter page. It is a daily freakout over anything. I mean, if Trump says one thing, Joe Walsh is there. And again, it's this holier than thou. He is better than you because he saw the light and went to the left. Here's something he said earlier today that caught my attention. Joe Walsh said, sure. Word we can't use on the air, on both parties is easy. You may feel superior saying both parties suck, but you're wrong. Only one party, the Republican Party, is a threat to our founding principles. I don't have time right now to dream about a third party. I've got to help defeat that threat. I mean, these buzzwords, they've been saying it for 10 years. The party, democracy is on the line. Democracy is on the line. You're the party that didn't run a primary. You're the party that lied about the ability or the mind of the former president, President Otto Penn. Democracy, it's so lazy. As I said yesterday, these buzzwords, these go-to racist, sexist, Nazi, fascist, it's lazy. And Joe Walsh, Bill Kristol, I mean, these former Republicans, now they're again holier than thou. They're better than you because they are opposing Trump. Here's another thing Joe Walsh said this morning. He goes, a message I got this morning. Quote, Joe, you can't support Jews and support Mamdani. He is a complete anti-Semite. I used to love you, but I can no longer follow you after this. And then he goes, well, then call me the exception. I told her, because there's no bigger defender of Israel than me. My wife is Jewish and I support Zoran. Notice he didn't say that his wife supports Zoran. I guess I'm weird. Look, he's the Democrat nominee and we Democrats need a big tent to defeat my fascist former party. And by the way, it's okay. In fact, it's good to follow people you disagree with. That doesn't even, what? So he's not denying that Zoran Mamdani has said anti-Semitic things. He is saying, hey, whoa, we need to let everybody in the tent of the Democratic Party. I mean, that's pretty much the message he's making here is that, hey, yeah, Zoran Mamdani might have said anti-Semitic things, but we need a big tent because we have to defeat the Republicans. And it's daily. It's multiple posts like this daily from people like Joe Walsh, Bill Kristol, Adam, the former congressman in Illinois, whose name escapes me right now. But these are it's become like a religion to them of just hating Trump and being the former Republican that had to leave the party. And really, I think that Trump and the current administration really broke these people. And, you know, I cannot believe we're in a time where you have, again, a former Republican saying the Republican Party is so bad, we need to make sure that the party is attractive to everybody, including Zoran Mamdani, who he doesn't deny has said anti-Semitic things. He never denies it in that post. So I thought that was interesting. And again, it's every day. It's every day. We have a joke of a county executive here in Erie County, New York, who, by the way, I mean, this guy, he was he wants to be a congressman so bad. And when the current Democratic congressman, or I'm sorry, the former Democratic congressman stepped down in the city of Buffalo, he decided to do it right after the county executive had been reelected, a time he said he wasn't going to run for reelection. And they skipped over him. And obviously he was upset, but now he thinks they're going to, I don't know what he thinks, he's going to get a job in the governor's office. But this guy, every day, it's just regurgitating Democratic talking points. And it's so funny because you know that not even your own party likes you, but he is a great, he is another one of these every day. He starts the day off, not about Erie County. He could not care less about Erie County. He is posting about Trump and about national stuff. And I'll tell you, you would never know it. You would never know it with his post, just focusing on Trump 24/7, 365, that Erie County, New York has a poverty rate higher than the national average. You wouldn't know that 36% of the county depends on Medicaid. You wouldn't know that the average median, I'm sorry, median average, same thing, that the median household income is $7,000 less than the American average. You would never know it because this guy is so focused on Trump and crying about Trump 24/7, 365. He doesn't care about the county that he's literally run into the ground, that he's been the county executive of since I was in college. And you see this all over the country. I'm using the example locally because you see this all over the country, these local politicians who, again, they just, everything's Trump's fault. Let's not focus on how we've run our blue city into the ground. We got to deflect to Trump, who hasn't even been president for, you know, this is, what, 7 months into his second term. Yet people who have been in office for decades, Charles Schumer, he's complaining about Trump, but not, you know, not pointing out to how New York has gone to hell since he's been senator. And you see this all over the country. And again, these just daily, everything, the world is on fire every day for these Democrats. And you know, I did a topic on my show in Buffalo yesterday. Did the Democrats never hear the story, the boy who cried wolf? Because the Democrat Party is the party that cries wolf. And I'm telling you, you continue to do this. You continue to blow everything out of proportion. Everything is defending democracy. You know, war with Republicans. I mean, you continue doing this, and you've got people out there, and we saw this in the No Kings protest. You've got people out there that are angry at something in their life, right? Something has happened in their life, and they are just angry, miserable people. And I'm telling you, with rhetoric that we are seeing from the American Democratic Party, you have people that are taking that anger at something in their life, a relationship that didn't go wrong, they're feeling towards their parents, something like that, and they're refocusing it on Trump. And, you know, you're using rhetoric like going to war, eliminate Republicans in certain towns, as we've heard in my hometown. And what's the result? You have people angry. And again, they're not angry at Trump. They're angry at either their life or something they've done in their life. And they're projecting that anger onto Trump. And it just, everyone's miserable. Everyone's miserable. And like I said, the Democrat Party eventually is going to have to find something to not complain about. Because you cannot continue to call wolf. Yes, you might have your angry followers, but the average American, as we saw in November, is going to say, guys, this is getting exhausting. You cannot tell me that everything is the end of democracy, that everything Trump does, he's an authoritarian. It's getting exhausting. And I think that's playing into their poll numbers. And again, I think it's why you see Democrats freaking out, looking to the midterm elections, because they're the way things are going now, they're not going to get that wave. But as someone said yesterday on this show, over a year in politics is an eternity, and anything could happen. And we are going to keep our eyes on it because that's what we do here. When we come back, we'll be talking with Austin Karp, the managing editor of newsletters for the Sports Business Journal, talking about this ESPN and NFL deal. We might also ask him about the WWE deal that was announced right after the NFL deal. It's Joe Beamer in for Mark Reardon on 97.1. Hey, welcome back. Joe Beamer in for Mark Reardon on this Wednesday. And we are joined by Austin Karp, managing editor of newsletters for the Sports Business Journal. Austin, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
So big news, ESPN, NFL, making a really big deal. What are the specifics of the worldwide leader in sports and quite possibly the most powerful sports league to ever exist?
Yeah, I mean, this has been developing over the course of around 4 years, maybe even longer, and it took probably an army of lawyers to figure it all out and get it done. But the easiest way to think about it is in terms of like four separate deals between the NFL and ESPN announced over just the last 24 hours. The biggest one that everyone's talking about is, you know, this equity deal where the NFL, a league, taking a 10% stake in ESPN. And as part of that, you know, the estimates have between $2 and $3 billion, all of this deal. ESPN gets control of the NFL Network, the linear NFL Red Zone channel, all of the NFL's fantasy sports business, and will take that on pending government approval. And obviously some kinks to work out there, not going to be really done in time for this season, more likely in time for the 2026 season. Then you have like what's like a separate licensing deal. You know, you had a bunch of games over these last couple of years that aired on NFL Network. A lot of them were those Europe games, 9 a.m. on NFL Network. So it was a package of around seven games. Three of those games are going to go over and be controlled by ESPN. Four remain under control by the NFL. They'll be able to, like, sell those to another partner. And so ESPN is going to then take whatever's in its package of games and populate its own network, NFL Network. It controls that. It's going to populate that with games. So there's sort of a licensing there deal there for some games. Then you have a separate agreement just about the NFL draft. That'll extend through 2030, sources are telling me. That'll be 50 years of the NFL draft on ESPN around 2030. And that also happens to coincide with the end of ESPN's Monday Night Football deal. The NFL has an opt-out for that year. And the last thing is another licensing deal for some NFL Plus content. That's that over-the-top service that the NFL launched. So on August 21st, when this new ESPN direct-to-consumer service launches, think of it like an ESPN Netflix. It'll have some preseason games. It'll have some NFL content immediately to attract an audience to that new ESPN service. So a lot has transpired between the two sides just over the last 24 hours.
So NFL Plus will still exist?
Yes, this deal wasn't for all of what we would call NFL media, just those, the NFL Network, the linear Red Zone channel. The NFL actually retained the rights to sell a digital version of NFL Red Zone, think Verizon, YouTube TV, and it also will keep, like you said, NFL Plus. It'll keep NFL Films, control of NFL.com, which is all of the sites. So it didn't sell everything under that NFL tent. But they wanted to get out of the linear TV business. NFL Network launched in 2003, completely different era. But look at where we were. Like 10 years ago, you had networks like ESPN in 100 million homes. It's half of that now. And the NFL saw what was happening with the business of cable TV. They're like, we don't need to be a part of that. Let somebody who's an expert in that, Disney, ESPN, take control of the business. So that's where we're at.
So, you know, NFL Red Zone obviously gets a ton of attention. Is that going to still be produced by the NFL and distributed by ESPN? How does that work out? Because I would argue that ESPN Red Zone is more popular than NFL Network these days.
Absolutely. It's a great question because all of the conversation I see from fans out there is, oh my God, ESPN's going to ruin NFL Red Zone. They're going to have Kendrick Perkins replacing Scott Hansen as host. You know, that's one of the funnier ones I actually saw. But no, this will continue to be programmed by NFL. Any of the studio shows that you might see on this ESPN digital service, their direct to consumer product, all of that will still be programmed by the NFL. Scott Hansen is still going to be there taking you through it. In the fall, no changes there.
Will there be now? This might not have come out yet because, like you said, there's still some things to work out. But will there be a notice on NFL Network? Will there be a time where you notice? Oh yeah, this is now the ACC network of NFL.
It's a great question because when you're watching SEC Network or you're watching something on ABC or ACC Network, you generally have a feel like, all right, this is ESPN programming. There's likely even an ESPN marker there. That remains to be seen, but I think for the short term, you're going to continue to see that as NFL programming. But over the course of the years, as they control NFL Network, stuff that they're creating on their own, they're, of course, going to want you to know, like, hey, this is ESPN's programming. We're the ones doing this. But I think it's going to be a slow burn on that and nothing you're going to notice immediately.
Now, this 10% stake in ESPN, because, obviously ESPN has the very attractive contracts, right? They have every conference in college football except for the Big Ten. They had baseball. They're losing baseball after this year. They have the NBA. They got a new contract
with
the NBA.
We'll see about baseball. I think that's still there. Yeah, that contract is expiring, but, if I'm paying attention to the tea leaves correctly, we'll see if ESPN is done with its Major League Baseball relationship.
Interesting. But this 10% NFL stake, what do you think that means for the future? As you said, in 2030, Monday Night Football is up. I mean, but if the NFL has skin in the game, well, they're not going to let the NFL walk from ESPN. What does that mean for the future of this relationship?
Exactly. It raises a lot of questions. I mean, not just about, editorial and the articles that you can write with NFL being a potential owner of ESPN. But does this mean that they're now the most favored son out there when these rights come up? So there are questions about what is that going to mean for the future of rights? Now, the relationship is really good between right now, obviously, because they struck this deal between the two sides. It wasn't always like that. When Jimmy Pitaro came on as president of ESPN in 2018, that was a fractured relationship. He had to do some real repairing there. So it's been a 180, and there is a very good relationship. There's no reason to believe that they weren't going to renew a rights deal in the future. But, this just makes it very interesting. And, this was an unprecedented buy of a league into a network. For only around 24 hours, it just came out that as part of Skydance taking over Paramount, which is, CBS, the NFL is also taking an interest in CBS and Paramount now. So they have equity in two of their media partners in the last 24 hours.
Wow. Now, I want to get back to this deal, but, I want to talk Monday Night Football since we're on the topic of Monday Night Football. You see more and more games creeping onto ABC. When it moved to ESPN, original series were very popular. I would say now the only reason most people watch cable TV or network TV live is for the sports. Is that going to make a full return to ABC, do you think, in the near future?
I don't think it's going to be full ABC, especially as part of this deal, because there are clauses, obviously, with some of those broadcast TV partners about having exclusive games maybe on ABC. But something you did see, and you'll see less of this season, or once this deal gets struck or approved by the government, is there, I'd say around four times a season you had those overlapping games. One might air on ABC, ESPN2, and then another on ESPN. Well, that was kind of hampering the audience. So that is where you're going to see less of that. You'll see one game a week for Monday Night Football, and those games where they tried to do doubleheaders, that's part of what they're going to use to populate NFL Network with some more games to make sure they have a pact of around seven games over the course of the season. But the Super Bowl, that will be on ABC. ABC will be the primary area of that in 2027, so not this coming season, but the season after. But who knows, when they have those opt-outs in 2030 with ESPN, who knows? Maybe this becomes more of a digital deal where it's for the ESPN direct-to-consumer product, that Netflix-like product that they're launching on August 21st of this year, and ABC, the broadcast channel with the biggest reach. Maybe that's more of the focus of the NFL deal like it was for Monday Night Football during the 90s.
I'll tell you, if they could get rid of the Monday night playoff game, Austin, I'd be really happy.
They pay a lot for that. They paid separately to be able to do that, because if people remember, ESPN used to kind of get, well, not shafted, but they got the low end of the totem pole in selection. They would always have a Saturday 4 o'clock game that typically involved the Texans. I swear it was the Texans like every single year that they were having that slot. They wanted to stand out. They paid even more money on top of their existing media rights deal to get that Monday night slot, to get it on ABC, ESPN, and then having the Manning cast on the Deuce.
I'll tell you that one of those many Texans games on ABC featured Josh Allen, and the Bills just that when they called back, I know I'm reliving something almost 10 years ago, but when they called back that should have been touchdown, when they didn't fair catch it, when they didn't down the ball in the end zone. Oh my gosh. What could have been, right? What could have been?
Yep.
Exactly. Josh Allen's gotten back for that a few times, but, the fantasy football is also interesting because of, I mean, just how powerful fantasy football is. I mean, I barely know anyone who's only in one league, and now merging these two together, I mean, it's not a monopoly because you still have Yahoo and others out there, but I mean, it's the most powerful fantasy football league probably in the country now.
Yeah, I mean, an incredible amount of fantasy players were already doing it through ESPN. You know, I'm pretty Yahoo loyal. I'll be honest, I've been Yahoo since the late 90s doing my fantasy. Never really switched out of there. But, you know, they wanted to gain some market share. And NFL had been running fantasy for a long time. I mean, it wasn't huge business. But for ESPN, fantasy is tremendous business. And not just fantasy. Where do they want to grow? They want to grow betting. They have that almost, I think it's like a 10-year licensing deal with Penn National for that ESPN bet. They want their fantasy players to also be betting on ESPN bet. And that has not been growing at the rate that they thought it would be. There's actually an early look in for both sides. So this may be, you know, an effort to really try and grow that market share for ESPN bet too, before they make a decision, both sides, as to, you know, maybe we go our separate ways on this licensing deal.
You know, the NFL Red Zone that I know we already talked about what's going to happen with it, but ESPN distributing it, you know, it brings back when ESPN used to have goal line for college football. And I would argue it failed because, you know, at the time the SEC spotlight game was on CBS, so they couldn't dip into the spotlight game. You think there's any chance that now that they're going to be distributing NFL Red Zone, they package that with a new version of college football Red Zone?
Absolutely, and this is one of the biggest things about this deal, is they are not just getting, you know, the linear Red Zone channel, but they're getting the rights to use the Red Zone name across other leagues. So you may see, yeah, an SEC football Red Zone channel or some sort of general college football one. Or what about an NBA Red Zone or an NHL Red Zone? I mean, I know obviously Red Zone is something germane to football, but and they've tried these products, different, you know, these sort of, you know, flip around products with these other sports. But when you say Red Zone to a fan, you know exactly what you're getting. It's that look at various games where there's some interesting action going on. So if you call it NBA Red Zone, if you call it SEC Network or SEC Football Red Zone, you know exactly what you're getting. And I think you're going to see that absolutely on ESPN in the future.
Final thing real quick. I know I'm up against the clock, but ESPN also made an announcement with the WWE. Do you know the specifics of that?
Yeah, it was around a five-year, $1.6 billion deal. This is for those PLEs, their big tentpole events, WrestleMania, Royal Rumble, SummerSlam, etc. It's around 10 events, 12 nights over the course of the year. These had been on Peacock. And what did it do for Peacock? It drove subscriptions to that service as it was getting going. And that's what ESPN, with its new service, wants. It needs subscribers. You know, that ESPN Plus service right now only has around 22.5 million subscribers. So what do they want? NFL games, bring in people. WWE, bring in more people. And you're going to continue to see them add content that some of it will be exclusive to this service. And that's how they're going to attract viewers and really build up the service over these coming years.
So the WWE will be exclusive to ESPN Plus. It won't be on ESPN?
I think, yeah, just those premium events. If you get this, what's called an unlimited, like a basic package for this new ESPN direct to consumer service, you will have access to those tentpole events. And there's obviously, you know, the NBC and, you know, Comcast are still in business with the WWE for, you know, one of their weekly shows. You have the show Raw that's on Netflix. And next year you're going to have, you know, the rights that are probably going to be up for the archive of old fights, which remain incredibly popular among wrestling fans. I know I would love to check out something like SummerSlam from 1990. That's something that, you know, maybe an ESPN could add a year from now, but it's going to be, you know, up for a bid out there in the market.
Wow. Austin, hey, really appreciate the conversation. Austin Karp, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
That is Austin Karp, managing editor of newsletters for the Sports Business Journal. We'll wrap up the show after this. Hey, welcome back. Joe Beamer in for Mark Reardon, winding things down here. You know, talking with Austin Karp last segment, I have to say, you know, it's good that for ESPN that they're grabbing all these contracts and, you know, expanding coverage. Because, I mean, the days, you know, I remember being in school, right, in middle school. What do? You wake up, you get a bowl of cereal or something, and you flip on the TV and watch SportsCenter, watch highlights. You got the calls. They're breaking everything down. You know what happened in the NHL last night, the MLB, the NBA, the NFL, you know, everything that happened. And now there's no, I mean, SportsCenter, yeah, it's nice when they're showing highlights, but in a time where I can just pick up my phone and see the highlights from everything that happened in sports last night, I mean, ESPN doesn't have that draw. And I don't know about you. I'm not like a huge sports debate show. I mean, if there's a big thing going on in sports, yeah, I'll watch First Take. I'll watch some of the shows. But for me, I'm not going to the network for SportsCenter or Pardon the Interruption, which I don't think is on the air. No, the other one got canceled. I don't go to ESPN for those anymore. I go for college football, NHL, NFL. Like I'm going for the game. So I think to survive, this is kind of what ESPN has to do. They have to have so much content that they're filling it with games and, you know, not replays of 30 for 30 on Tuesday nights. So I think it's a smart move by ESPN and the NFL wanting to have a little bit of control there. Good for them. Also, you know, it is kind of it's kind of funny that happened on the day before I do my big stadium tour. Hey, why don't you say, let's do the audio cut of the day.
Stand by. Playback ready.
Now, the audio cut of the day.
And let's do wrap up what we've been talking about the last 3 days. Clip 22.
This is the third time I've seen it in my political career. I haven't seen the Democrats ever leave on any other issue, whether it was abortion, whatever we talked about, they would stay and fight. This is the only issue that they've ever cared enough about to leave. And as ironic as it is, going to Illinois, probably the most gerrymandered state in the country, is it's so hypocritical. It's incredible.
Yeah, that is Texas Attorney General Ken Paxton talking about the fleeing Dems. And, yeah, I mean, running away from your job. Wouldn't you like if you didn't like something that was going on at your job, you could just leave and know when you came back that your job was still there? I mean, that must be nice. And, you know, again, you've got the Democrats still in Illinois hanging out at the Governor Pritzker hotel there. And we'll see what happens. They'll continue to get the spotlight from the mainstream media, obviously. But we'll see what happens, because as we've heard from multiple guests this week, Texas is going to get their way, right? The GOP is going to get their way. Again, debate it either way you want. They're going to get their way. And these legislators just escaping the state in the name of democracy is pretty ironic and hypocritical. And that is the show for this Wednesday, August 6th. I have to say, I'm happy I'm still on the air. My Buffalo show, I was not on the last 5 minutes because our equipment crapped the bed. So it's nice to be able to actually put a cap on the show. And as I always say, it is such a pleasure to be on the air with you and have these opportunities to fill in the great state, the great city of St. Louis, and work with Sue Thomas, work with Fred, work with Ethan. Great team. I love working with them. And hopefully, I'll have a chance to be back on the airwaves very, very soon. Don't forget, tomorrow, John Hancock is in for Mark. That will start at 3 o'clock. Hey, if you want to follow me at the Joe Beamer on X, I post a lot. I'd like a few more followers. Is that pathetic to say? But I post a lot. You can follow me there at the Joe Beamer. You can follow me on Facebook, Joe Beamer. And for any liberals out there, yes, I do not like echo chambers either. So I'm on Blue Sky, the Joe Beamer on Blue Sky. No one follows me on there, but I try to break up the echo chamber. You can also email me, joe.beamer@wben.com. Would love to hear from you. Again, thanks, Sue, Fred, and Ethan. It was great working with you. Hope to talk to you again soon. And don't miss John Hancock in for Mark tomorrow at 3. Have a great Wednesday.
Get more at 971talk.com.